Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Here's the Good News right after this. You know, a marriage is a state-licensed business. It's a three-party, limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it is regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and the Family Court. And the best part about all of this is that you have absolutely no input into or say-so over the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of it. And if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Now, marriage is the most important. It's the most expensive contract that you can engage in. That contract is more binding, and it is more costly than your military enlistment or your 30-year home mortgage. And I'll bet you know a whole lot less about it than you do your military obligation or your house payments. Now, 67% of all marriages end in divorce. So whether you're a husband or a wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, to defend against any breach of this marriage contract. And that's why you should know and understand the terms and conditions of your marriage contract before you marry. And you should write that contract yourself instead of letting the state write it for you. Now, whether you're married or not, why don't you write for my free general law CD package and let me share some vital information with you about this law and the marriage contract. Just call us direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. That's an easy one, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Do it right now while you're thinking about it. You know, last week we talked about the bad news. I gave you some reports from the International Forecaster, the Privateer, and so on. And I said, you know, psychologically, most people are unable to take all of this bad news. It's like a hammer blow to your gut, you know. It's a psychological downer. And as I've mentioned before, if you don't have a solution to the problem, you don't need to talk about it. Now, they're constantly on the news talking about Darfur, you know, that little region of the Sudan over there where they're practicing genocide. You got the Arabs working against the blacks, and they're over here just killing people right and left. And they've been jawboning about that in the United Nations now for, oh, hell, 5 years, haven't they? You know, every once in a while on the news, there'll be another report on Darfur, you know, Darfur. And more on Darfur. I get tired of listening to that crap. Now, either go over there and do something about it or shut up. Go solve the problem. Which demonstrates the ineffective use of the United Nations. If in fact there is an effective use, it certainly, that's got to be one of the classic examples. The United States isn't doing anything about it, and we're the world's number one geopolitical and military power. The Russians, you don't see them rushing down there to Darfur to straighten it out. You don't see the Chinese rushing over there saying, hey, listen, we're going to send the People's Republic Army of China over here and we're going to straighten you guys out. The people of Darfur obviously can't defend themselves. And the Arab majority that's oppressing these people, then evidently they don't want to stop. They want to keep right on. So I guess they've got an agenda. And that agenda must mean the death of every black man in the region. I guess if the Arabs had their way, they'd kill every black there. And so there's all these aid agencies, and they come along, and they're over here, they're just jawboning, and they're talking, and they want you to send money. And that's where the real bottom line to this is. It's money. See, they come along and they say, now, see, look at these poor people over here. And they show us the pictures of these poor people, and just kind of tears your heartstrings. And you say, God, I wish I could help. And so the solution that they propose is that you send money to this, that, or another organization over there, and we will go over and feed these people. We're not going to stop killing them. We're not going to go over here and separate this region into a new government or a new country. What we're going to do is take your money and go over and feed these people, the ones that are left alive by the Arabs that they haven't killed. And that's the solution. So I took a look at that and I said, I really don't want to participate in that kind of a solution. I'd like to see a solution to it. I'd like to see those people left alone. I'd like to see those people, you know, live their lives get on, you know, with their lives and do it in prosperity and so on. It's like you and me and everybody else. But I don't think that's going to happen. And so the solutions that are advanced to us here in this country, we have two solutions to every problem. It's vote and pray. Vote and pray. Now, watching the news the other night, I noticed that Bill Moyers came on the Lair News Hour. They got an advertising promotion, and they're promoting the upcoming American elections. And PBS likes to take the position, you know, we're not opposed to the Republicans or the conservatives or this or that or something else. But you can see the underlying bias in PBS toward Barack Obama and the Democrats and the liberals. It's in the press. I mean, I just watch and pay attention. And over time, you know, are they promoting the Republicans and conservative values, or are they promoting the Democrats and liberal values? And I suppose it's natural. I mean, Bill Moyers used to work for Lyndon Johnson. He is a speechwriter for him. And so I could understand Bill Moyers and his liberal bias. But he says this is the most important election. Hell, he's been telling us that along with everybody else for all my life. This is the most important election. The 1952 election was the most important election. And then 1956, and then 1960, and on it goes. And what I've observed in my lifetime, what's watching all of this voting going on, the circumstance here in the United States of America has grown progressively worse each and every election cycle. The national debt grows higher and higher. Personal liberties become less and less. There's more and more gun control. If you take a look at slavery, you take a look at the erosion of our personal liberties, with the exception of the last decision by the Supreme Court affirming your Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms as an individual right, except for that, once in a while there's a little glimmer of hope, you know, that shows up on the horizon, but generally speaking, there isn't. And so, I don't care whether you're a liberal or a conservative, or whether you're a black or a white or a Republican or a Democrat, the solution that's always advanced is vote. It doesn't make any difference how you vote, but get out there and vote. Well, wait a minute. If it doesn't make any difference how you vote, then what's the purpose behind it? I thought that the reason that this was the most important election is because George Bush has led us to rack and ruin, and we need a change. That's what Barack Obama's telling us. So if the important thing is it doesn't make any difference how you vote, but get out there and vote, then if that then is the ultimate end, then there's more to this voting thing over here than meets the eyeball. And indeed there is. There's a very important reason why these people want you to vote. Very important reason. It's legal in nature. It's legal in nature, and it has to do with your power of attorney. Now, one of the little bylines that I'm constantly faced with is they say, listen, if you don't vote, then you don't have any right to complain. If you don't vote, you don't have any right to complain. I reject that. That's nonsense. Because about half the people of America vote and the other half don't. And so what you're saying to me is the half of us that don't vote don't have any room for free speech. Only you voters out there have a right to free speech. The rest of us can sit down and shut up. And I say stuff it. I've got just as much right to free speech as you've got whether I vote or not. And on top of that, if voting was the solution to the problem, you wouldn't have any problems. I mean, come on, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. We've been encouraged to go vote. It's a part and part of the American psyche. I mean, if you don't vote, you know, you're un-American. And I'm sitting here asking some questions. Okay, if you went out and voted in the last election and you voted for George Bush, are you happy and satisfied with your choice? Or did you make a mistake? Well, if you made a mistake, then you should have stayed home in the last election and not voted at all. If you voted for the right guy and you're one of the 23% that still supports George Bush, then you should be just as happy as a clam at high tide. But the rest of the people are all miserable and unhappy. And they all went out and voted too. They voted for the other guy, John Kerry, but he didn't get elected. So it looks like to me the majority of you people had to have voted for the guy that today you made a mistake in voting for. Well then, if you made a mistake in the last election voting for George Bush, could it be that you might have made a mistake a couple, three elections back when you voted for Bill Clinton? Because remember, in 2000, you people all wanted a change. Or could it be that you made a mistake when you voted for Ronald Reagan? Or you made a mistake when you voted for this or that or another guy looking on back? I mean, somebody must have made a mistake somewhere. And the problems that we face keep getting worse and worse. Now, which election that you voted in solved the national debt problem and balanced the budget? Can you point to that election that solved that problem for us? All right, can you point to the election that solved the Federal Reserve problem and gave us our gold and silver coin back pursuant to Article 1, Section 10? Which election was that? Which candidate was it that you voted for that gave us back our gold and silver? Just take a look at every and any problem that you're concerned about and then ask yourself, well, which election was it that solved that problem? And the answer is, there wasn't any election that solved the problem. The problem's still with us and getting worse. And here comes Bill Moyers and says, because the stakes have never been higher. Oh, I'd agree with you, Bill. God, the stakes are getting higher and higher, you know, with each election cycle. I don't deny that. But which election was it that solved the problem? Now, this coming election cycle is a little doubt in my mind, but what we're going to elect a new guy, his name is Barack Obama. And this is the guy that's going to solve the national debt, give us back our money, take away the gun control legislation, and, you know, he's going to make everybody happy and healthy and wealthy. Let's take a look at inflation. I saw Dow Chemical Company the other day. They raised their prices 25%. That's a pretty significant raise. Rio Tinto, one of the biggest iron ore mining companies down in Australia in the world, raised their prices by 96%. So they doubled their prices for iron ore. Our government tells us the inflation rate's running under 5%. And here's Dow Chemical raising their prices 25%. Here's Rio Tinto raising their prices 100%. I would challenge any of you people out there to show me anything that's raised in price 5% over the last year or two. 5%. Just held to a 5% increase. Name one. I don't know of anything that I'm buying today that's 5% higher than it was last year. It's 25, 50. Price of corn has doubled in the last year. Price of wheat's doubled, tripled, and quadrupled in the last year. Price of gas has doubled in the last year. I mean, everything. And so the solution to this is we got to vote. And I'm sitting here asking the question, hang on a second here. If voting is going to solve the problem in 2008, then it should have solved the problem in 2004. Or it should have solved the problem in 2000. Or it should have solved the problem past tense in 1996, and it didn't then. It hasn't solved one problem going back 75 years. Now, what in the hell makes you think it's going to solve your problems this year? Now, there's got to be some solutions out there. That's why I said last week I told you about all the bad news. This week I want to tell you about the good news. And the answer to that is there's always been a logical solution for all of us. It's always been there. And many people avail themselves of the solutions, and then they're not complaining. So let me just point this out. Let's take a look at the income tax and the alternative minimum tax. George Bush gave us tax relief. Remember, he campaigned on this. He says, I'm going to lower your taxes. And he did. He went out and he enacted a whole bunch of tax reduction programs. Now, those tax reduction programs were aimed at certain demographic population groups. Did you get the tax relief that you were seeking? Because I got all of the tax relief that I was seeking. I didn't get it from George Bush. I'm not complaining about the income tax. I don't pay it. I don't pay the income tax. And the reason I'm not paying the income tax is because I don't have any income. And boys and girls, I avoid income like AIDS, herpes, and VD. And I'm not here, you know, ranting and raving against the income tax. Hell, I think the income tax is a great, great invention. And all of you people out there that believe in it and love it and pay it and fill out your report, your returns and reports and you want to do it, get after it. Hell, I get the best of both worlds. I didn't care much for it. I didn't think it was a very good program. I thought it was regressive. I think that it destroys your economy. I don't think that it does anything for you or your family. Nothing. Zero. And if it does, it's a damn minute that you'd have a hard time finding it with a 10-power loop. But, you know, the majority of Americans want the income tax. And they have voted for the income tax over and over and over and over and over ad nauseum. The people of America want it. They love it. They want to wallow in it. So who in the hell am I to come along here and take away something that the people of America want? But I needed to point out here that there's a thing here called the alternative minimum tax. Alternative minimum tax. The George Bush tax reduction program. God love him. Maybe he means well. But it shifts the burden of taxation onto the middle class of Americans. And it's called this alternative minimum tax. See, so if you don't have much tax to owe, then you've got this alternative minimum, and the alternative minimum is greater than the tax burden that you had before you made the tax reductions. George Bush did not give us a tax reduction. He gave us a tax increase. You're paying more money in tax today than you were when George Bush took office 7 years ago. And that's just where reality is at. I mean, if you're an average Joe Sixpack, I'm paying less. I'm happy. God love George Bush. Now, George Bush did not give me a tax reduction because I wasn't paying any income tax when he took office. I quit doing that a long time ago. I took a look at it and I said, hey, this income tax isn't a good idea. So here's some good news. The income tax is, in fact, voluntary. And all of you people volunteered for the income tax when you signed up with Social Security. Remember when your mama did that when you were born in the hospital? She signed you up for the income tax coming right out of the chute. And that's because your mother and your daddy, they are practicing communists. They practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and they taught you to do the same thing, just like my parents taught me. And I was a practicing communist until I was 37. But here's the good news. Here's the good news. You can stop practicing communism any day of the week. You can just plain quit. When you get a belly full of it and you've had enough, and it's taken enough of your money and it's impoverished you to a point that you say, you know, that's it, uncle, I've had enough. You can quit. See, that's the good news. And that's what I want to share with you this week. Remember, the governmental options that we have here on planet Earth, there's just two. And I'm not talking about Barack and John. I'm talking about two different forms of government. And there's only been two forms of government on this planet from the Garden of Eden to this day. And that's all that's available to you this day. You don't have anything else available. Here's what they are. You have the Ten Commandments model from the Garden of Eden and the Creator of the universe, and you have the Babylonian religion model, which comes from the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, or vice versa, however you want to word it, however you want to look at it. One is a bottom-up limited government model, and the other is a top-down unlimited government model. And I don't care whether you're living in Germany or Brazil or China or Russia or the United States, Canada, Australia, or New Zealand. Wherever you're living in the world, you're practicing one of these two governmental models. And it has 10 points to it. Here's what it is. You have certain rights and duties based upon social, economic, political, business, monetary, property, education, health, moral, or legal responsibilities. All of us, whether we like it or not, just breathing air, you have social responsibilities. You have economic capacities and responsibilities and duties. You have political capacity. You have business rights and monetary capacity, property rights, educational duties. You have health responsibilities. You have moral duties and you have legal responsibilities. I don't care whether you're a communist living in China. All 10 of those in DISI fall upon you. Those are choices that you have to make. You and I make these choices every day of our lives. Let me give you an illustration. I said, Americans love the income tax. Let me back this up and show you why. In 1992, a guy by the name of Ross Perot was running for president. Do you remember that? I mean, some of you people probably can't, but us old farts can. And this guy, Ross Perot, he made an observation. He said, if you adopt this free trade proposal, then you're going to offshore, you're going to downsize America's industrial capacity. You're going to really be sorry that you did that. That was Ross Perot. And so did you people vote for Ross Perot, the guy that said no to NAFTA? No to GATT. No to free trade. Did you vote for Ross Perot? Well, the majority of Americans listened to Ross Perot, Bill Clinton, and George Bush Sr., and they made a selection. They made a choice. The choice was there to make, and they made it. And they chose Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton then went on to ratify NAFTA. Now, in the ensuing years, from about 1992 until today, we've lost 4 million manufacturing jobs in the United States. Ross Perot's prognostications for the future have all come to pass, without fail, and Bill Clinton's prognostications for the future about all the jobs that were going to be created and all the wealth that was going to be produced and the happiness and the glory that was going to be ours has all failed. Hell, even if you're a Democrat, you know you gotta wake up to reality, don't you? I mean, you take a look at the manufacturing sector in America, which represented 60% of our gross domestic product in 1960, it represents less than 13% today. In fact, I think it's 9. Okay. I'm not here to criticize you. Evidently, that's what you wanted. You wanted steel mills removed from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and placed in Japan, China, and Taiwan, because that's what happened, past tense. There are no steel mills in Pittsburgh, so therefore there's no steel workers left in Pittsburgh. Okay, I guess that's what you wanted. All right, that's the bad news. Now, the good news is that the people of Pittsburgh are still living there. Well, greatly diminished. The population was over 1 million back in the 60s. It's around 300,000 today. That's what they call a rust belt city. Well, evidently the people of Pittsburgh, I don't know, how'd you people in Pittsburgh vote? Well, let me ask you this. Did all of your voting save your steel mills? Or maybe you succeeded. Maybe your objective was to get rid of all the damn steel mills. Well, okay, well, then you've succeeded. Voting has worked for you. Keep after it. All right, so now, the good news is, you know, you can quit voting anytime you want. You don't have to vote. And here's what voting creates. It creates a slave model. Slaves vote. Let me repeat that in case you missed it. Slaves vote. And they vote for a guardian. They're voting for a guardian. These people are politically incompetent. They are unable to manage their political affairs. And they need someone like Barbara Boxer or Dianne Feinstein or Kit Bond or somebody to go to Washington, D.C. and manage their political affairs. Well, I used to do that. And then one day I woke up and I said, you know, these people that are going to Washington to manage my political affairs are not managing my political affairs the way I would manage them if I could do this myself. And one day I woke up and I said, you know, I think I'm going to take on my own political capacity. George Gordon is going to become politically capable of managing his own political destiny all by myself, without anybody else in the world helping me. Hell, with all the rest of you working against me, I can do it. And you could do it too. Now, the second option here, the second option before we take our break, is to pray. The political people tell you, this is Bill Moyers, he says what you need to do is vote. Now, the political guys on the other side, they say you need to pray. And then some of them will say, well, you need to pray first and then go vote. The solution to every problem, I don't care whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, whether you're a liberal or a conservative, it's to pray or vote. That's the only options that you have. You want to solve the national debt? You want to solve offshoring of jobs? You want to solve the problems in Darfur? You have to pray or vote. So let me ask all you religious people, I've been praying for years and years. I remember when Hurricane Katrina was coming in. You had a week. See, this Hurricane Katrina was out in the Gulf of Mexico, a week before it hit New Orleans. And, my God, the prayers that were going up. People were just praying mightily. Praying mightily. I don't think that God was short of people praying and asking and crying and beseeching and please send this hurricane to Mexico or any place but Texas or Louisiana. And so, when it was all said and done, the hurricane hit New Orleans and the Gulf Coast and just raised hell with everybody. And so I'm sitting up here in Missouri, you know, and I said, oh, my God, all these people are out here praying. Well, their prayers didn't work. See, that just makes religious people livid. They just get mad as hell and write me letters. Save your breath, you know, and you're going to change very much. You can write me a letter, I guess, if you want to, but... The reality was, you people were down there just praying mightily. I didn't hear anybody voting, but they were down there praying mightily, and it didn't help you any. Now, if there is a God in heaven, and if this God's got half the power that he claims to have, if this guy can create, you know, universes, you know, great planets and galaxies, and he said, I created the heavens and the earth. I mean, that's a pretty big guy, you know. Hell, my daddy was a pretty big guy, but he never created any galaxies, you know, like the Milky Way or black holes or did anything. He never created any suns or moons or stars. He was a hard worker, and he did a lot of creative things, but he didn't do anything, you know, spectacular like that. Now, it seemed like to me that a guy that can create the sun, which is the driver of our weather here on planet Earth, it looks like to me to be a bigger trick to create the sun than it is to control one hurricane. So I just kind of naturally figured that the creator of the universe, you know, a guy that's big enough to create the heavens and the earth, is probably big enough to create a hurricane. Or he could probably dismantle one, you know, if he put his mind to it, or steer it. Hell, you know, even if the guy was weak and ineffectual and couldn't stop the hurricane, maybe he could just steer the damn thing onto Mexico or somebody else.
Well, you know, you people down on the Gulf Coast ought to wake up to reality. He didn't do either. He couldn't steer it away from you, and he couldn't stop it. Or did it occur to you that maybe he created it, and maybe he steered it right onto the right spot at just exactly the right time and destroyed the 23rd largest city in the country? Has it occurred to anybody that the creator of the universe, the God, you know, creator, that he did it on purpose and he did it for a reason? Has that ever crossed anybody's mind? So while you're mulling that one over, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, that doesn't mean that these authors and publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate and endorse us. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. But these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views and beliefs or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about some good news here. Let me pass on to you the beginning point in the good news here. It's in Leviticus. This is in the Bible now. This is Old Testament theology here. You Christians now can shut the radio off and go listen to something more intelligent, because we're going to read this section here in the Old Testament of the Bible in Leviticus chapter 26, which has been abolished and done away with, and it's just not for you, okay? So you go ahead and go do something else. Go listen to acid rock or something. Now, for the rest of us over here, that's the three or four of us that are left over here, there's some good news over here. And the good news is that there is a God in heaven. And this guy, this God, this is a little different breed of cat than the average Joe Sixpack God that you've been listening to or been hearing about. This guy over here, his claim to fame is, he said, I created the heavens and the earth, and I put kings on their thrones, and I kicked their asses off. How's that? In fact, there was a king by the name of Nebuchadnezzar. He's pretty famous in his day. And he said, now I know who it is that puts kings on their thrones and kicks them off. So if you want to know who put George Bush into the Oval Office, it's this guy right here. This guy put George Bush into the Oval Office. And that, and with that act, he did not do us any favors. Well, so says about 77% of the American people, who are all in agreement that George Bush is the wrong guy in the wrong place at the wrong time. Well, do you want to know who gave us George Bush? It's this God right here. The guy that wrote Leviticus 26, verses 1 through 13. This is the guy. So, you got to ask yourself, why would this God do such a thing to us? Why would God send this Hurricane Katrina and destroy the 23rd largest city in the country? Why would this God want to do these bad, wicked, terrible, awful things to us? I think those are good questions to ask, and this guy tells us. This God here tells you in spades, says, listen up. I'll tell you why I'm bummed out. I'll tell you why I'm sending hurricanes and droughts and floods and inflation and George Bush to plague you. All right. But before we get into that bad news over there and why this guy's doing it, I gave you the bad news last week. I thought, well, you know, there's good news and bad news. You ever heard that story? You know, hey, there's good news and bad news. Okay, well, give me the bad news first. All right, well, last week I gave you the bad news. All right, now give me the good news. Well, the good news is you can quit this anytime you want. When you get a belly full of the income tax, you can quit that. When you get a belly full of inflation and the loss of your property and the impoverishment of your family, you can quit doing that any day of the week. Now, that's, in my view, pretty good news. There's a solution. You don't need to pray. I mean, if you're an atheist, prayer doesn't have anything to do with this. Nothing. In fact, I'm going to read you a part of the story. And in this story, there isn't, the word prayer doesn't even appear. You don't have to pray to Jesus to get these benefits. I'm going to read some benefits here too. You don't have to vote either. In fact, voting is your problem. In fact, voting is your problem. The more you vote, the more problems you're going to have. The less you vote, the less problems you're going to have. And that's just the way it is. Now, I didn't make it that way. I'm just a reporter. I'm just here to report facts. What you do with those facts is your business in life. Hey, partner. It's no skin off my back one way or the other. If you want to practice communism with 299 million other Americans, get after it. That's what you've been doing all your lives. That's all you know. It's the best thing for you. Now, I woke up one day and said, I don't think this communism is near as good as it's been made out to be. So I stopped practicing communism, and I'm very happy with the outcome of it. I want to point out to you that Warren Buffett and George Soros And there's this guy at Microsoft, you know, this Bill Gates. Those guys don't practice communism either. Those three guys with their billions of dollars do not practice communism. They preach it, they teach it, they advocate it for you and me and everybody else, but they don't practice that. My God, those guys aren't dumb. The people that practice communism are poor. They stand in line and share the shortage. There's about 3 million people in the United States that don't practice communism. And almost to a man, they advocate it. They sell it. They're out here encouraging you to practice communism. Because communism is a slave system. It's a system of slavery. We'll talk about slavery a little later, but I wanted to give you a little flavor here. From the creator of the universe. Listen to what this guy says. You want some good news? Listen to this. I mean, this is the best news you can hear. This guy has a plan to make you rich. And that's everybody's hot button. Everybody wants to make a lot of money. And this guy has a program to making a lot of money. And I took a look at it years ago and I said, that's nuts. And so I went on and practiced communism. Then after I went broke three times, see, I gotta tell you here before I get started. I went out and worked real hard and I made a lot of money. And then I lost it all. And then I went out and I worked real hard and I made a lot of money. And then I went out and lost it all. And then I said, well, you know, I'm pretty good at this. I've done it twice already. If I work real hard, I can make a lot of money. So I went out and I worked real hard and I made a lot of money. And then I went out and lost it all. It was three times. I did it three times. And that last time I lost it all, I was just devastated. I just said, I just don't know what in the hell I'm doing wrong here. I could make it, but I couldn't hang on to it. And I woke up one day and I said, hell, there ain't no point in making it if you can't hang on to it. All I'm doing is going out here and creating and producing a lot of wealth, and then somebody else comes along and takes it away from me. I got to have a better solution than that. So I'm happy to report I changed my methodology. I quit that communist. That was, I got to be 37. And I woke up one day and I said, this communism over here isn't working well. I don't know what is going to work well, but I do know what now does not work. Communism doesn't work. Doesn't work for me. No, if it works for you, keep after it. But it didn't work for me. I tried it. I tried that income tax. The second plank to the Communist Manifesto, hell, that didn't work worth a darn. I tested it. So now I went out and I worked real hard and I made a lot of money and now I'm able to hang on to it. And I'm a lot happier now that I'm able to hang on to it. So that's the good news. And if I can do it, remember, I'm a high school dropout now. So I'm not a George Soros or a Warren Buffett or a Bill Gates. I'm not real smart like those guys are. And if I was real smart, I'd be a billionaire. I'm not a billionaire. But I'm not complaining about the income tax, and I'm not complaining about George Bush and the tax cuts and the alternative minimum tax and inflation. Hell, I'm not complaining about prices going up. I'm not complaining about $4 or $5, $6 gas coming up to $7. $7 gas is coming up in your lifetime. $7 gas is in your future. Here in America, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. Wake up to reality here, kids. And I'm not complaining about it. Now, I'm one of the few that's not complaining about it. So let me share with you a little piece of wisdom here. Didn't come from me now. See, I'd like to claim fame for this, but this comes from the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Listen to this guy. He's got a wild story to tell. He says in verse 1, this is Leviticus chapter 26. This is in the Old Testament, third book of the Bible. He says, you shall make you no idols, nor graven images, and neither rear you up a standing image, and neither shall you set up any image of stone in your land to bow down unto it, for I am the Eternal your God. All right. Coming right out of the chute, he says, you know that Statue of Liberty that you got in New York Harbor, and no state houses, and that Capitol building in Washington, D.C., and that Washington Monument, you know, that upright penis that you've got sitting out there in the mall? He said, don't build those. That's number one. And he said, don't worship them, number two. You worship them by voting and participating in the political process. He said, don't do that. Okay. I didn't write this, so don't get mad at me. I'm just a reporter. In verse 2, he says, now you shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary because I am the Eternal. Now that's verse 2. He says he wants you to keep his Sabbaths. That means don't practice Christmas, Easter, New Year's, or Sunday, but rather practice the Passover, the Days of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of Tabernacles, and Saturday. Hey, listen. I'm not here to apologize for this guy. I'm just here to report. Just here to tell you. Don't do that. Now, as long as you practice Christmas, Easter, New Year's, and Sunday, you vote, pledge allegiance to the Statue of Liberty, and practice the laws of the United States, Tennessee, and California, you can stand in line and share the shortage. You can just wallow in your misery until hell freezes over, because that's what's coming down on you. Now, that's the bad news. But the good news is you can quit doing that any time of the week. And you've already been doing that all your life. So just ask yourself now, are you happy with the income tax, inflation, and $4 gas? Because if you're happy with it like I am, I'm not complaining. Okay, well, everything's going good for you. All right, so listen up. Here comes verse 3. He says, now, if you'll walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. Your threshing shall reach to the vintage shall reach to the sowing time, and you shall eat your bread to the full, and you shall dwell in your land safely. All right, let's pause right there. In the Midwest, as I speak, we're having floods. In the West, as I speak, you're having wildfires. You've got drought in the West. and you've got floods in the Midwest, boys and girls, that is not rain in due season. Got that? Now, I'm getting rain in due season. I'm not complaining. I'm everything's going fine for me. I'm the only guy in Ozark County that practices this law to my knowledge. Now, there might be one or two others that I don't know anything about, probably is. But I'm not suffering from drought, and I'm not suffering from floods. I got plenty of rain. Everything's going great. No complaints. And I want to point out, I practice these statutes, judgments, and commandments, and I do them. I practice the Passover, the days of unleavened bread, the Sabbath on Saturday. I practice the 15 economic laws. I'm not complaining about the income tax and inflation. Now, if you practice these laws, you get certain benefits. Doesn't have anything to do with praying, though. I mean, you religious people out there can just pray mightily. I don't think it's going to do you any good. I think you actually have to get off your dead ass and go to work. That's my observation. I think you got to do that. Because that's the instruction that I get here in Leviticus chapter 26. Gets better, though. Verse 6, he says, I'll give you peace in the land. And you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. I'll rid evil beasts out of the land, and neither shall the sword go through your land. Now, I know we got two wars going over here, and a third one on the horizon. I'm not complaining about the war in Iraq. I don't think it's a very good enterprise. I don't think it was a very good idea. You know, that war in Afghanistan, I don't think that was the brightest thing we ever did. But then, you know, hey, listen, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. And this upcoming war in Iran, I don't think that's a very good idea either. But, you know, I'm not going to tell you people not to do it. And I think the powers that be want it, and they're going to do it. And I just saw on last night, it was on the news, and then the newscaster said, reported that four big oil companies, it was ExxonMobil, Shell, BP, and Total, have got four contracts to divide up all the oil in Iraq with no bid. Isn't that real special? And then the commentator said, you know, that just lends credibility to those that say the war in Iraq was for oil. Hell, I've been telling you people that for the last 3 or 4 years. The war in Iraq has nothing to do with democracy, has nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction. It has everything to do with 25% of the world's oil reserves. And they have just been divided up among the four big oil companies with no bid contracts. The United States of America just awarded and said, okay, ExxonMobil, here's what you get. Shell, British Petroleum, and Total, the French oil company. Here's the way it's divided up. And you Iraqis, remember I told you this 3 or 4 years ago. I said, sit down, shut up, fold your hands, because we're coming over there and take your oil away from you. Now, of course, those people over there, you know, they're a little upset about that, and I just wanted to point out to you that I'm not upset. I didn't vote for George Bush, and I ain't voting him out of office. I ain't voting for the next guy because I'm politically competent. I can handle my own politics. I can't handle yours for you. I can't handle the politics of the United States. That's bigger and worser than anything I can think of. But I can handle George Gordon's politics, and by God, I don't need George Bush and Kit Bond and Barbara Boxer, and I don't need Bill Moyers to tell me how to vote either. Or that this is the single most important election. That's what Jim Lehrer's tell us. It's the most important election. And Bill Moyers is telling us, oh my God, the stakes have never been higher. Get out and vote. And they probably believe it. Verse 7, he says, then you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before your sword. 5 of you shall chase 100. 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemy shall fall before you by the sword. Hey, that war over there so far isn't going near as good as it used to go in the old days when this God was fighting our wars for us. Like, you know, when Andrew Jackson defeated the British at New Orleans, he had 1,000 men, took on 10,000, whipped them. Hey, we got the biggest military establishment in the world, and we can't win those two wars. Hey, this God, I don't think, is fighting this war for us very well over in Iraq. I don't think that deal's coming down. And did you see what's going on in Afghanistan? And that war has turned to, you know, what, in short order. That's not going good over there at all. So I just thought I'd point that out to you, that this Taliban gang over there seems to be winning the war. Can't defeat them. A guerrilla army, they just need to avoid defeat. And that's all they got to do. So what happened to you over there in Vietnam? They just kept after you until you guys got tired and quit. And then you guys are going to get tired and quit over there in Afghanistan. And then when you get tired and quit and you pull out of there, just like the Russians, just like the British, you know, you just look back over the last 500 years and you just name the one world power that went over to Afghanistan with them guys. Those Afghanis ain't been doing nothing but fighting for the last 500 years. That's what they do for a living. And if you got anything better to do than to fight, you know, then you ought to get after it, because they're going to keep fighting with you until you Americans just give up and quit, just like the Russians and the British did. See, you haven't got the stick-to-itiveness. You haven't got what it takes to subdue Afghanistan. The British didn't have it, and the Russians didn't have it. Now, if you Americans think you got it, you just keep after it. I got news for you, though. See, there's this God over here, and this God over here, he's going to be working against you. We'll get into that a little bit later. But I just wanted to point out the good news. If you want to win, if you want to be on the winning side in a war, you need this God on your side. This guy is a winner. Every place this guy goes, the other side loses. Did you know that? When this God is on your side, you win, the other guys lose. Every time. It hadn't failed yet. This has been going on now for 5,000 years. Well, four that we know of. He says in verse 9, because I will have respect unto you, and I'll make you fruitful and multiply you and establish my covenant. I'll establish my contract with you. That's very important. Very important. I took a look at this contract. This is called the Old Covenant Contract. He said, this God here says, I will establish my covenant with you. Now, if you want to go to church on Sunday, you know, that's fine. Don't let me get in your way. This guy here has a little different program. He says he wants you to keep his Sabbaths, not yours or somebody else's. He wants you to keep his. And he wants you to keep his holy days. You know, instead of Christmas, Easter, New Year's, let's try Passover and Feast of Tabernacles. Now, I know you're not a Jew, and I know you are a Christian, and I know that you don't want to do that, and furthermore, I know you're not going to. Okay. And so, now, let me move ahead. Now, last week, I showed you this. It was in Revelation chapter 9. Remember that little story I gave you last week? Now, pretty soon now, you're going to get tired of this. See? Now, here's the bottom line. He says here in Revelation 9, verse 20, he says, and the rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues yet repented not of their works, the works of their hands, that they should not worship devils, and idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and of wood which neither can see nor hear nor walk. Neither repented they of their murders, nor of their sorceries, nor of their fornication, nor of their thefts. Remember I showed you last week, I said, you know, you want to use Federal Reserve notes? Okay, but you're going to be impoverished thereby by inflation, hyperinflation, and depression. Now, when you get a belly full of this, you can change. This is the good news I wanted to give you this week. You can change any day you want. When you get a belly full of this, you just remember now, you heard it here first on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, most people don't change until there's an absolute crisis or emergency that absolutely forces them to do it. I mean, I didn't. If you'd have come to me with this story when I was 20 years old, I'd have told you to kiss off, just like you're going to tell me to. Okay, but that's the bad news. Now, the good news is, when you get a belly full of this and you've had enough of it, you can change it. And you can change it overnight. And you're just 36 months. See, I teach a business school. And I've done this three times myself, and I teach my students how to do it. First thing we got to do is get you out of debt and get you to zero COD. Zero COD. When we get you to zero COD, get you out of debt. Up to zero. See, most of you people are buried in debt. You're at minus $50,000 or $100,000 or $200,000 or $500,000. Well, you can't make money when you're in debt. That don't work. I tested it. Didn't work for me. I've been watching people for the last, 40, 50 years. I haven't seen any successes along that line yet. You're encouraged to go into debt, and that's where success and money come from. No, sir. That doesn't work. It hasn't worked for you. It isn't working now. Hasn't worked for you in the past, and probably ain't going to work any better in the future. But once we get you to zero COD, you're 36 months, just 3 years away from $100,000 worth of gold in a hole in the ground. 36 months, that's what it takes. Don't have to pray, and you don't have to vote. In fact, praying and voting will probably delay your success. That would be my opinion. I'll tell you about that praying thing here in just a minute. He goes on to say, he said, now, I'm going to establish my covenant with you, and you shall eat old store and bring forth the old because of the new. He said, you're going to have more food than you'll know what to do with. Hey, boys and girls, starting to see rationing in the United States of America. Rationing. That's not a blessing, boys and girls. That's a curse. Now, if you want to have more than you know what to do with and more than you've got places to put it, you can change anytime you want. Verse 11, he says, I'll set my tabernacle among you, and my soul shall not abhor you. And I'll walk among you, and I'll be your God, and you be my people. It's a guardian ward relationship. He says, hey, change sides. You join my team, and I'm going to work for you. Because I'm the eternal your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, that you should not be their bondsman. And I have broken the bands of your yoke and made you to go upright. Now, you black people out there think you're the only people that have ever been taken into slavery. I want to tell you that I'm from a long line of slaves. Hell, I practiced slavery till I was 37 years old. And let me tell you one more thing. In America, we have a form of slavery over here that isn't official, but we've got this unofficial form of slavery. I'll tell you more about that next time. Yeah, we're practicing communism. That's a slave system, that communist system. And that's what Americans practice. Now, anytime you want to make the change, you can come to practicing this law. And this law has 15 points. The economic portion of this law, 15 economic laws. You practice those 15 economic laws. I'm not saying you're going to become a Bill Gates, a George Soros, or a Warren Buffett and make $1 billion, but you'll make $1 million, and that ain't too shabby. $1 million bucks. But you got to practice this law. You got to quit practicing communism. All right, now that's good news. Good news. Hey, I'm about out of time, so let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. Now, for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.